You're listening to the Cinemaphile Podcast with Andrew Shearer, brought to you by OnlineAthens.com.
All right, podcast listeners, welcome to the Cinemaphile Podcast, Friday 5 episode. With me, as always, is Sam. Hello, Sam.
Hello.
I was just thinking about how in 2005, 10 years after I met you, you changed my life forever for the best.
Oh, yay. That's good.
Yeah. All the,
what did
the
I do? Time,
dude, we started hanging out so much. Like, we never hung out when we worked together. Not really. Like, a couple of parties. And then when we made your student film. But, like, for real, we, like, really threw down. About 15 years ago, it must have been, right? Is my math right?
You know, we have Blockbuster to thank for meeting, and we have Blockbuster to thank for that because they laid me off of work and paid me for like a lot of months. And I'm like, cool, let's hang out and do stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Cause yeah, we met working at Big Blue, and then due to your exodus from Big Blue, we got to do that. So check, as you and the podcast listeners get to reap the benefits of our enduring friendship by listening to us talk about the five most recent things we watched that we also liked in the past month. And I had to stop myself from, I meant to ask you, what did you do on July 4th? Obviously you don't go somewhere and really tear it up with fireworks and stuff. So what'd you do? Did you watch any movies?
One of the movies I'm going to talk about today I watched. Other than that, I did yard work. Like, it wasn't.
That's so exciting. Tell me more. No, I decided that my movie marathon was going to be the Fantastic Four because of the 4th.
Ah, that's a good way to do it.
Well, I was thinking like I saw those movies when they came out. You know, like the there was one in 2005, and then one in those are like pre like Marvel Cinematic Universe Marvel movies, and they were from Fox. But it was like it was when the CGI and like the style was starting to really happen, but right before like Iron Man and everything else, you know. And so I'm kind of fascinated by that period of Marvel stuff, beginning with, you know, stuff like Blade. But, and you know, going into Daredevil and Elektra and all of that stuff, it's like there's something about them. I don't know what it is. They aren't very respected movies, but yeah, we watched both and my kid loved them. They're both, did you know they're both PG-13 or no, PG rather, those first
really?
Two?
Well, yeah, actually, that doesn't surprise me. I don't remember anything being like too over the top or gory or sexy or curse words or whatever.
No, they are more the kind of movies that they are trying to, you know, like all the pajamas and all the backpacks and all the toys of Captain America and all this stuff that they're selling to kids, but the movies are actually really violent.
You're
and
right.
They're 13 and up, but they're marketed toward way younger kids. I thought those two Fantastic Four movies were more the kind of films that would be marketed towards children. I mean, they are, my kid's 7 and she really got into it.
That's cool though.
Yeah. So that was my decision to do that. All right, man. So you want to start to on one of those movies you watched, or you just want to take a pick?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to start with the oldest. And for once, my list is full of stuff that is very current and you can get like streaming online most anywhere. So yay. My first one is Lovebirds. Have you seen this?
Oh, I saw it like the day it came. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
It's, that movie is hilarious.
It was great. I mean, I really like comedies, but comedies have to be very, for me to like them, kind of very smart and not like, I'm not into like the Hangover movies and things like that. And so this one is just really, really well written. And like the plot point is ridiculous, as is with most comedies, which is totally fine. But it just was a lot of fun. And I watched this the weekend it came out. It's a Netflix release. So you can totally check it out there. But it also happened to be like the same weekend that stuff in the real world was getting really heavy. And it was the perfect escape for like an hour and a half. I'm not sure that I've laughed so hard at a movie in a long time, but I legitimately just full on laugh. So for those of you that don't know anything about this film, it's about a couple and they're going through a rough patch. And all of a sudden this cop kind of confiscates their car with them in it to chase down this bad person and ends up killing the bad person. And then they realize it wasn't really a cop. And instead of just sticking around waiting for the real police to show up, they freak out and run. And now they think that they are being chased by the cops and they're determined to figure out who killed the guy and who was the guy that took the car and to solve this huge mystery for the police so that, you know, they can clear their names. And so all of the crazy, impossible things that you can think of happen. And then some. Like, legit, it was and then some. There are nods to other movies in this. There are just so many great lines and moments. And every single person in the cast is great. It just, it was a lot of fun. And it's been a long time since I just, like, had fun watching a movie.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, man. I have gravitated so much toward comedies this year. With all, yeah, like you said, the real world is just so like such a constantly oppressive thing. You want to like really just laugh at the end of the day. That's what we're doing. And so, yeah, for me, Lovebirds, man, I love Issa Rae and Kumail Nanjiani. I think they were like such a great, they had such great chemistry. I know that's like a cliche thing to say, but my only gripe with this movie, I wish they'd made it a Christmas movie because one of my go-tos for Christmas for years was a movie called The Ref, which is great, except Kevin Spacey is in it, and I do not want to see Kevin Spacey's facey. So this, a lot of the stuff in this movie reminded me of The Ref. If you give all of Dennis Leary's great lines to the two main characters, basically, and take out the kid. You know what I mean? I mean? At one point, there was a scene with the two of them arguing in a car, and the bad guy's there with the gun back there, and he even says something akin to that "I hijacked my parents' line" that is in the ref. You know what I mean? And so, if this had been Christmas, I'd have been like, "We're burying that." Even though, as much as I love the ref, it has a place in my heart, but it's kind of fallen away to the left side of my heart because of Spacey's facey. But yeah, that was my only thing. But I'm like you, man. I this was like one of the best comedies. I know it came along at just the right time.
I'm also glad that it became a Netflix release because I had wanted to see it in the movie theaters. It was supposed to come out in April in theaters. And then obviously, you know, pandemic hits. But I almost worry that had it released theatrically, it probably wouldn't have done that well, but given the way it got released, the way it got picked up, I'm hoping that more people will actually watch this film because it's amazing. The cast is great. It's just so good.
Watch Did it. You hit your leg when you said it's just so good?
Maybe.
It's just so good. I don't want to make my dog run at me. God, don't do that. Okay. Was it time to go outside? I sat outside. Oh, God. I really messed this up. All right. We're going in order that we saw them. Oh, speaking of movies I was not in the mood to watch, The Five Bloods by Spike Lee. This is also a Netflix original movie. I honestly, man, with Lovebird, it was going to have a theatrical release. I don't think it would have been watched by as many people. You know, and I think the same is true with The Five Bloods. I feel like, you know, this would maybe we wouldn't even have seen it by now. You remember like Black Klansman got like limited release and stuff because of the Oscar buzz and all of that stuff. And like a lot of people saw it first. That's one thing that this whole like day and date digital release thing, skipping theatrical altogether, is basically erased. Like it's not like New York and LA get to stream this first. You know what I'm saying? Like there's silver linings with everything. I don't like war movies. The only war movie I watch, I've seen more than once, is Apocalypse Now and the Hughes Brothers Dead Presidents. That's pretty much it. So I was like, God, I wouldn't want to watch a movie normally. I really don't want to watch a war movie right now. You know, it's the realistic violence that gets me and all the just the injustice of the entire thing. It's a depressing thing. However, I wanted to see what Spike Lee's Vietnam movie was going to be like because I knew it would be very, very different. And it really is. Did you get a chance to watch it or no?
I have not seen it yet.
Oh, I don't want to say anything. I don't want to say anything. Are you gonna?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm gonna.
Oh, man. Oh, there is. Okay.
You can give a little away. Like, I know the premise.
Okay. You know about the gold?
No, I didn't know about that, but I don't know how that ties
into. See, I'm already messing up. Okay. I'm already messing. I will just say this. Here's one thing that I feel like people that have watched the trailer will know. This was out of all the plot elements, out of what it's about, because like what Spike Lee does, he can take something that happened in any period of history and make it relevant to right now, which he does. Great cast, including Jonathan Majors, who I loved from The Last Black Man in San Francisco. When you think about The Irishman, how they like digitally de-aged De Niro and Joe Pesci in them in the like scenes that take place in the past. This movie is about a group of guys that are, mm-hmm. that were in the same squadron or platoon in Vietnam together that are going back to Vietnam for some unfinished business there.
Right.
And so there are scenes, and we know Chadwick Boseman is in this movie. There are scenes with Chadwick Boseman. They are, Vietnam scenes that shows what happened to them in the past. The actors look exactly the same. Spike Lee does not digitally de-age them. And at first you're going like, when is this happening? Cause I just saw that guy now. And I just, and he, and this is supposed to be, in the past, someone would have like had a younger actor play him and stuff. And sometimes that gets confusing or whatever. So what he did was, he just changed the aspect ratio for the old stuff and made it look like old combat newsreel footage and stuff. And then the rest of it looks like modern day, you know, 235.5 or whatever. So that's mm-hmm. that was a choice that he made, and I thought it was amazing. And it has everything to do with the story, and I loved how it made – it all connects is what I'm saying. But I'm not going to say nothing else. I probably already said too much.
It sounds great. It looks great. The trailer is wonderful. So, but I mean, I actually kind of appreciate that artistic vision to like not de-age them and just be like, here's a flashback, even though it's how they look now. That's just what you get. And that's kind of a cool artistic choice. So,
yeah, I thought so.
All right. Well, my next movie is called The Current War. I saw this trailer like forever ago. I'm not even sure like when it got released, where it's released. I just know like it was made a couple years ago, and I'm not sure if it ever like officially came out somewhere. It is the story about
it played here.
Okay, cool. It's the story about Thomas Edison, George Westinghouse, Nikola Tesla, and kind of the race for who's going to illuminate through electricity the United States. Benedict Cumberbatch is in it, Michael Shannon, Tom Holland. Why do I always forget the other guy's name? Nicholas Hoult. And it's a really – I really liked the movie. And to be quite honest – these characters aren't written in a way that really makes you like any of them, quite frankly, except maybe Tom Holland's character, who is Samuel Insull, who is kind of Edison's right-hand person. They're kind of all weirdly self-indulgent and greedy and selfish, and like, it just, it's kind of insane. Like what they go through, what they put their family through, what they put the government through, just so that they can be the one to win. And it's an interesting look and take on what happened. I don't know how historically accurate it is, but I suspect, you know, what you learn in school is that Thomas Edison invented the light bulb and that's why we have electricity. This clearly opens the door that there is a lot more to this story. Tragic things happen to the characters, different things that happen throughout the movie. You sort of feel bad for them. And at the same time, like, I didn't like any of them, but it didn't make me not like the movie, which sometimes is what happens when I don't like any of the characters. The actors are amazing. Don't get me wrong. Benedict Cumberbatch, wonderful. Michael Shannon, great. Like, they all are so good. It just is like, it's a good movie. It's interesting. I don't know what else to say.
I don't know what to say either, but I got a joke if you want to hear it. It's related.
I love jokes. Go for it.
All right. So okay. a guy opens his refrigerator and there's a rabbit laying in there. And the guy's like, "What are you doing in my refrigerator?" And the rabbit goes, "Hey, is this a Westinghouse?" He's like, "Yeah." And the rabbit goes, "I'm just Westing." Better like, okay, guy opens his refrigerator and Elmer Fudd's in there. I should have said that first. I killed a rabbit and I'm just Westing. All right, man. The parallel, what I got free here. I'm going to move things around a little bit. I've watched so many documentaries. I don't know what's the deal. It's like comedies and documentaries are what I want to watch. I've also been sent a lot of documentaries for work. I've reviewed a ton of them and I did just fine. A lot of really good ones have come out. But I want to talk about Susie Q, which is about Susie Quattro. Do you know who Susie Quattro is? I get a no usually.
I was going to say, should I? I'm not sure.
That's the whole thing with this movie. Susie Quattro was so ahead of her time that the people who were influenced by her are the names we know. Because you've heard of Joan Jett, right? Talking Heads, Blondie.
Totally.
L7, The Runaways. Like, she was one of the first women like rock and roll stars, but she did not get any success in the United States. She was huge in like Australia, number one hits, England, like all over other places in the world, but she never hit it in the United States. And what's crazy, she's from here. She's from like Detroit. And so I'd heard of her. I like her singing. I can't tell you a favorite song because, my opinion, she just didn't have the songs really. But she had everything else. She sang and played bass, looked and sounded amazing. So this is her life story. The movie's called Susie Q, and it is about how she and her sisters had a band first. And you, when you look at like the years this stuff was happening, you're going like, dude, there was no like all girl rock band. That wasn't even a thing anyone thought was possible. How are these women like? And you hear the songs and the way they sound, and you're like, oh God, I would have flipped over this, but would I? Because nobody had a concept of it. And so like all those bands I named, they wouldn't have existed. Because they all were like, saw her and like flipped out over her. It's just the rest of the United States did not. God, I sat there thinking about the whole history of rock music, really, from the 60s, 70s, 80s. I mean, what would it have been if she had become famous? Because it already had its awesome people, you know? So I was just like, I was waiting. It's a fascinating story. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Well told. She's alive. She's still playing rock and roll. There's no big secret. But what I was hoping the movie would end with was the big tribute concert to Susie Quattro that all these bands got together and played and did her songs with her. It's never happened, to my knowledge. It's never happened. It's not how the movie ends. I mean, it ends appropriately, whoa, but I thought there would be some kind of you know what I mean? Some kind of big convergence with all of them. But all of those artists are in the movie, and they all do, you know, say awesome things about her and talk about her influence. But yeah, Joan Jett is sitting there talking about, you know, she deserved huge fame. And I'm like, I hope they're friends. There's some pictures of them together. Because when you see Susie Quattro in the black leather and playing the guitar and doing her moves and stuff, it's like Joan Jett exactly. But Joan Jett was like later. Huh. You know what I mean? Like a kid when she was up there doing that Joan
Jett.
That's
crazy.
Yeah, I know. So I don't know who I'd recommend it to, but if you like documentaries about rock and roll, especially, you know, names that you're not familiar with, man, especially when it comes to women in rock and roll, this is fascinating. It really was.
Never heard of it, but now I'm going to have to check it out.
Okay, Sam.
All right. My next movie is The King of Staten Island. This is Pete Davidson, and it's a semi-autobiographical movie about kind of his younger life before he got famous. And it is written by Judd Apatow and Marissa Tomei, Steve Buscemi. There's some really great actors in it that play some amazing parts. I really like those kind of coming of age stories. And while this happens to be a 20-something year old dude coming of age, he experiences like a huge loss early on in his life with the death of his father and never really comes to terms with that, deals with it, figures out how to move on from that, in a way lets it sort of consume his life. And just like has sort of become this wanderer of sorts. And, you know, things happen. He decides to, his mom starts dating. That sort of forces and pushes the issue in many ways in the movie. His mom decides to kind of take action. His sister goes off to college. Like life starts to move on in ways without him. And it some ways sort of forces him to like figure out, okay, what am I going to do? I don't know that there's a clear like ending to the film in terms of like, hey, he went through all this crap. He went through like this kind of change and came of age and sort of started figuring things out. And this is where he ended up. It doesn't like go that far. It goes just far enough to a point where you're like, okay, he is going to figure it out. So it doesn't take you the full way into the story, but it takes you far enough to kind of know that he's found the beginning of a path. And that's sort of like a direction he's going to go. I have to admit, like, I don't watch a lot of SNL, which is where Pete Davidson is from. And so I don't know that I have seen a ton of his work and skits. I've seen him sporadically here and there. And so I appreciated getting to see a full movie with him in it. I felt like he did a really good job. I liked this movie a lot. It was also amazing to see Marissa Tomei. I love her in kind of every movie that she's in. And so it was really nice to kind of see something with her in it recently. Steve Buscemi is great. He plays a firefighter in the film, which he actually is a volunteer firefighter in the city of New York. So it's kind of interesting to see that play out as well. But I liked it. It was good.
Well, I was waiting honestly to hear from a Saturday Night Live fan about this movie. I have not watched it yet. I have not missed an episode of Saturday Night Live in 30 years. I mean, I've been watching it since the late 80s. My first episode I saw was the Sigourney Weaver episode when she was promoting Aliens. And I just you know, I used to record it because I couldn't stay up late enough. And then, you know, on through now, I have a Hulu subscription just to watch that. And so I obviously knew who Pete Davidson was. To me, he was a fascinating person in the history of the show, which has saw its share of drug casualties, decadent behavior, and, you know, just dead people. And so I was fascinated by how like transparent he was about his struggles, like on the show, and how he like integrated what he's gone through in his life into stuff he did in the show, which I just thought was really, really amazing. And, you know, very timely thing to do because, you know, Saturday Night Live, you know, you always found out after the fact that there was trouble with these people. And usually it was a tragic reason why you found out these things. So, I'm glad that it's not a movie about a tragic Saturday Night Live player. I'm glad that Pete Davidson is alive and he's, you know, acted in this movie. What I guess I wanted to know about it was how close to his real experience was it? Because I'm like torn between thinking no movie could be as fascinating as what actually happened to him. And also knowing that Judd Apatow, I have liked some of his stuff in the past, and but seeing Davidson acting out a version, a fictionalized or however how loosely version of his own life. It's a little JoJo Dancer-y to me, I think. And I was just like going, all right, well, sounds good, but the real thing is, you know what I'm saying? Like the real thing is I don't know. How could a movie be better than that? But I do plan on watching it.
Cool. I think you'll like it. I mean, if nothing else, Marissa Tomei is just wonderful.
Always love her. Always, absolutely. It's always been weird at seeing her playing moms, but you know, by now I'm kind of used to it. Let's see, because she looks exactly the same. You know,
I know. It's
like my cousin Vinny days. She looks exactly the same. What do I want to pop? Oh man, okay. Do you want to hear about the animated movie that I saw, or do you want to hear about the I know. Speaking of music, Sam, I saw a movie that you're going to love. You like movies about music and musicians, don't you?
Yes.
Like about their relationships and stuff. This movie is called I Will Make You Mine. And despite the fact that it has an all like Asian cast, this movie is in English because it's about Asian Americans. It's made, it's a feature debut of Lin Chen, who's also plays one of the lead cast members in this. And it's in black and white also, which I love. But yeah, it's about a real life musician whose name is Go Nakamura, but he's playing a he's playing himself-ish in a dramatic comedy. And so it starts with the mother of his child. They were never married. Her father's died. And so they come back to the house where he lived. And there's just like all this kind of emotional upheaval that occurs. They have a, you know, they have a little girl together, but there are two women that, used to be in love with him. One actually had a relationship with him and is still a singer-songwriter. The other one is now married. And she listens to his music all the time and like hides it from her husband, you know, and stuff like this. It is amazing what happens when he kind of comes back into town and all this stuff, which is initiated by the women, is brought up. But he does all the music in the movie also because he's playing a musician. So it's really him singing and playing, but his character is someone who has given up on their music career, in order to be there for his child. So he's not this like burnout, washed out, still trying to make it guy. Like that's not even a thing for him. People are like trying to encourage him to go back to doing that. So I'm like, I've never seen this story before, you know? But I love movies about music, especially movies about people making music and making music together. And the sound of the stuff he makes is very like kind of like indie rock of like our time. and so catchy. I was like, I would have loved the movie even if it was just music. I want to get all this guy's stuff, but mostly I just really want people to know how good of a movie. This is a 5-star movie for me easily. It's called I Will Make You Mine, and you can rent it.
That sounds really cool.
I think you'll like
it. My next movie is Irresistible, written and directed by Jon Stewart, starring Steve Carell, Rose Byrne, Chris Cooper, and what's her face from Tully? Why can I never remember her name? The one that plays the house sitter, babysitter, whatever.
I can't remember her name either. I know who you're talking about from Tully.
Yeah, she's in it too. So I saw the trailers and I wasn't really sure what to expect. I like Jon Stewart. I liked his show. I was like, this might be good. And so we watched this and I was kind of blown away. So Steve Carell plays kind of this strategist, you know, whatever for like elections. And he is the opening of the film is he is coming off of Hillary's loss to Trump. And Rose Byrne plays kind of the same type of career person, but for the opposing party. So she was, you know, helping Trump win. And so it takes place after that election, and sort of what happens is he finds, you know, this kind of small town farmer in a very kind of conservative area, and is like, he is the perfect person to run for the mayor of his town, and we're going to get him elected so that, you know, he can move on to become, you know, this conservative yet progressive liberal person that we can get into, like, as a senator and a congressman, and, you know, huge dreams. And so he goes to this small town, and Chris Cooper is the farmer that he is trying to get elected to take over as mayor for his town, and convinces him to let him run his election campaign. And it just is, it's really funny, and I can't give away too much because there are some pretty huge twists, and there's definitely things in this film that'll make you upset with how our elections are run and how we get candidates nominated and electoral campaign funds and stuff like that. So there is a lot of commentary through this film on our kind of political state and our democratic state and our election processes and all of that, as you would expect from Jon Stewart. But I really enjoyed it. It was good. There were definitely some funny moments. Chris Cooper is absolutely amazing. It was a good movie.
Yeah, I was, Henrik saw this at a drive-in, and he texted me saying it was amazing. Like, he just really, really loved it. And I was like, well, it's Irresistible, Henrik. But what I was wondering about it was how, because, you know, Jon Stewart made this documentary Rosewater a few years ago, and that was honestly the kind of movie I expected from him. I did not expect a comedy, but I also didn't really look much into what this one was about. Hearing your review of it, it does make sense to coming from Jon Stewart that this one would be a political comedy, because that's pretty much the entire game he was in for the majority of his career, and what he's known for was, you know, mixing those two together. And so, yeah, I'm definitely interested. I have not seen it yet, but it's one I'm interested in for sure.
It is also loosely based on a mayoral election in rural Georgia a couple years ago. So it is actually loosely based on something that happened. So yeah, you definitely check it out, because there's a lot of plot twists that you do not see coming at all. And they have kind of like, again, they're very, very heavily commenting on like our election processes and all the problems and with it. So it is, yeah, but it's very good. It's very well done.
That sounds good. I mean, two of my closest friends recommending it to me. I'm pretty much, that's pretty much a going to see movie. I've got, I want to talk about a movie that's animated and it comes from France and it's not really for kids. So I doubt any of you have any interest in it at all, nor will you see it. But it was one of the most like uplifting experiences, the most like complex experiences I've had watching a movie in a very long time. The film is called Morona's Fantastic Tale. Morona is a dog. For those of you who don't like seeing dogs in peril and don't like any plots dealing with the death of a dog, you are going to have to really research this before you watch it. But what I will tell you is that they do not make the fact that Morona, the dog, dies any sort of secret. It is the story of the movie. In the trailer, it shows Morona lying in the street. It's not gory. She's drawn like she would be drawn in a children's book. The animation in this thing is gorgeous, but also complicated because the way it draws the human characters and everything else in Morona's world is got like the proportions are weird. Their size or their expressions or even the color of their skin, I'm talking green, purple, it directly relates to the character itself. But Morona stays the same the entire time. The movie begins with showing her lying on the ground in traffic and a woman lying next to Morona. And the voiceover is from Morona the dog. And the movie is about life itself. I'm telling you, I have not cried so much maybe since I saw The Tree of Life. This is like a Terrence Malick kids movie. You know what I'm saying? Like a Terrence Malick, like French animated movie about a dog. If Terrence Malick were to ever make such a movie. I have such high praise for it. I think about these American family movies about dogs that die, like over and over again, these dogs die. The dog's promise, the dog's purpose, the dog's weekend at Bernie's. Like, there's so many of these movies. And they're all about
that would be a funny movie.
You know, at least somebody besides the dog would die. They're all for families, and they show these dogs dying multiple times and coming back. So you got to keep going through this experience the whole time. Morona at the very beginning shows you that the end of life is not the end of life. Like that's the death is not what should be the point when someone dies. Their life should be the point. So it gets that out of the way and it doesn't like harp on it. It doesn't show it happening. You know what I'm saying? She's just laying there. And so for the whole rest of the movie, it goes through her entire life from the time she was born and she narrates the whole thing and through each different owner that she's had. And the reasons why she ends up leaving that owner or that owner leaving them. And the whole recurring theme is this dog being left alone for whatever reason, a circumstance in these people's life by someone that loves them. My heart was tearing apart. But yet, if I was seeing this in a drama, I'd be like, why am I watching this? This is borderline emotional porn. I'm turning this off. But because it was a cartoon, and because of the artful way they show everything, it is more beautiful than anything that live action could ever hope to do to you. And so when you know, as the movie goes on, every single point that's a down has a huge up. And it really made me think about, you know, we are thinking about death and life a lot. And it made me think about how the focus of someone should always have been the life that they led and what they got from it, and not so much on the fact that they've died. I hate movies where dogs die. I hate them. Why would I watch a movie like this? It's because honestly, it's really about that. And it drives a point home that even an animal, the death of an animal, which I've experienced the death of an animal close to me, in the last, I guess, 5 or 6 years, it helps you keep your head in the right place about death, period. And I thought it was fantastic. Sorry if that was a ramble, but I know nobody's going to probably watch this. So, and it comes from G Kids, who release movies for kids as well as animation for adults. They made this movie called Chico and Rita, beautiful movie several years ago. They've released so many of my favorite animated movies, and this is now This is now one of them. So the name, again, for those of you who will ignore it and not see it, Marona's Fantastic Tale. Get it, tail, because it's a dog?
All right. My last movie is Where'd You Go, Bernadette? This is a Richard Linklater film starring Cate Blanchett, Billy Crudup, Kristen Wiig. There's a couple of like smaller roles, like with Lawrence Fishburne. I'm not really sure that I knew what to expect of this film. I saw the trailer and I was like, huh, interesting. Is this like a woman in having a midlife crisis? Because we don't typically see those. And when we do, it's, you know, more often like the result of a breakup or a divorce or something like that. And so I was like, okay, well, let's check it out because I really like Cate Blanchett. And this movie is very funny. It is about a woman who is married to this huge kind of like Microsoft developer guy and who is extremely smart. And they've been married a long time. And before they got married and before they had their child, she was an architect, extremely creative person, and sort of put all of that to the side for a couple reasons that I won't tell you because they get revealed throughout the film. And is sort of kind of losing herself and that creative part of her. And it manifests in like her family sort of thinking like there's something wrong, specifically her husband feeling really disconnected from her, thinking that she needs like professional help to the point of like, you know, maybe she needs to check herself in somewhere and get some help, as opposed to like, you know, really digging down and figuring out why this person is the way they are. Anyway, I thought it was a really very well done film about how as we age, we can let life consume us in this sort of way that we lose pieces of ourselves, that as we lose them, we don't realize like how detrimental like putting those things on the back burner or losing those pieces can be to just like kind of who we are as a person, and that we sort of kind of become this shell that moves through life. Anyway, it's very well done. It's very funny. There are so many humorous moments. Kristen Wiig is definitely somewhat of the comic relief as like the horrible neighbor next door that doesn't like them and thinks that they're weird and crazy and that they're, you know, terrible people. Billy Crudup continues to amaze me in this film. I know I talked about him from the morning show the last time we did this, but he is incredible in this movie as well. And I just really, really liked it. I connected with it in a lot of ways. And I don't know. It's just, it was so much better than the trailer made it out to be. So
I thought the trailer looked good, man. I really did. I don't know why I didn't see it. I even forgot it was a Linklater movie. You know, I'm not the biggest Linklater fan. I would say the last movie of his I really liked, probably Bernie, the one with Jack Black and Shirley MacLaine. Yep. Mm-hmm. Before that, I think it was Scanner Darkly, the animated one with Keanu Reeves. God, yes. I think before that, you're probably going to be talking like maybe Suburbia. I don't really dig most of what he does. I seem to like it, I think, more when he's really kind of out of the type of movie. Of course, I like School of Rock. What am I talking about? Everybody likes School of Rock. but you know what I mean, though? I think the most encouraging thing to me about this is the fact I didn't know that he made it. And I probably should have watched it before I knew that, because then I'm going to be like thinking of not necessarily like disliking anything because of it. Maybe that'll work in its favor. I don't know. But I remember seeing the trailer and thinking I wanted to see it. I just didn't.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm not the biggest Linklater fan. And like even Boyhood, I could not get behind it. It was hyped up. I watched it. It was fine. It was there. But this movie just is the actors in it, the script, the plot, how things are revealed. It's just really very well done. And maybe because it doesn't feel like one of his films is why I liked it, because I didn't even know he directed it until the end of the film when his name came up. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I encourage you to watch it because it's very good. It might even be in like, I don't even know if it came out this year, but I watched it this year. So it's probably in my top 10 right now for this year for sure.
I'm going to try to make this quick. This last one's really something. Talk about close to my heart. This is like right in the dead center of my heart, because I have a game for us to play before we're done with the podcast. So quickly, I want to talk about the other documentary among many that I watched, but this was one I personally was looking forward to. And this movie is called You Don't Know Me, Nomi. It is not about Klaus Nomi. I had several people ask me that as a joke. Klaus Nomi already had a documentary made about him. Thank you very much. This movie is about Nomi Malone, the movie Showgirls. Mm-hmm. Are you a Showgirls fan? Yes or no? You won't hurt my feelings if you're like, you know, whatever.
It was good. I can't say that I've gone back and rewatched it a million times. So there we go. Wow.
I went back and rewatched it the day it came out. I saw it twice on opening day. I saw it before work and then after I got off of work, because I saw it before work and I realized, you know, and there was like all the dudes there to see the stripper movie. So, you know, the raincoat crowd is there. But, you know, while I'm watching it, I was like going, dude, this is a Russ Meyer movie. This is so beyond the Valley of the Dolls. And so after it was over, you know, I go to work and everything, and I'm like, ooh, I saw Sugar. Because, you know, it was NC-17. So I was like, ooh, I saw the NC-17 movie, everybody. I go back for, like, the midnight show, and I'm like, this is Showgirl. This is a mid – I knew I was seeing a cult movie. I knew it. You know, I'm a Paul Verhoeven fan. I may not watch his movies a lot, but I love what he was doing in his series of American movies, which it basically lasted, I don't know, how many years would you say, like – RoboCop through Starship Troopers, so maybe about a 10-year run. But he'd made movies before that, and he's made movies after. He was satirizing us. He was satirizing our cinema. He was making fun. All of it was satire. Every single thing he did. Showgirls has a massive cult following. Huge, like explosive cult following. And this movie is about Paul Verhoeven's career. So you get like a Paul Verhoeven documentary, basically, which is by far long, long overdue for him. You get great analysis of his stuff, not from the cast of the movie so much as academics, fans, critics, people who are influenced by it. So this is not like an overgrown DVD bonus feature, which a lot of documentaries about movies kind of tend to be. The way that they emphasize things and move the story along and tell it, if you're familiar with his movies, they cut from one of his movies to the next to put him in kind of like some kind of really new context to where his films interact with each other in the same space. Mind blown. Mind totally blown. And so, yeah, and it touches on Showgirls, the musical, the Hollywood Forever Cemetery screening that Elizabeth Berkley came to and finally got her vindication. It covers every single thing and in such a creative way too. So for fans of Showgirls who are, you know, been waiting for some real legitimate recognition of the movie for exactly what it is, I don't see it as a so bad it's good. I don't believe in so bad it's good. That's one of my least favorite film terms ever, or guilty pleasure. Like, I hate both of those. It's seriously, and you know, it doesn't ignore the flaws that are about it, which doesn't mean like shoddy filmmaker, shoddy writing. There's really some disturbing stuff in the movie that they do not try to defend. But God, you just love Verhoeven. I mean, he's just so. I mean, I'll put it this way, and then we'll go to the game. Total Recall, a movie I'm sure you like. Everybody likes Total Recall. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where Arnold's character runs up a flight of stairs. The bad guys are chasing him. They're shooting at him. He grabs just some rando on the escalator. Didn't do nothing wrong. Uses dude as a human shield. And so he puts his body in front of him. The bad guys are shooting him up. Then he gets away. And the last shot, the bad guy's just stepping on this poor guy's bullet-riddled body. So if you listen to Verhoeven on the commentary for Total Recall, which he does with Arnold, Verhoeven goes, "This shot here of the body on the floor, I do that just for me. Ha 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 ha." And, you know, Arnold's like, "Fantastic." These guys were in on it. They knew what was happening. We didn't, you know? All right. So are you ready to play the game?
I am.
The end of the podcast? Yeah. All right. This game is called Streaming or 2021. We're going to go through the biggest names, the biggest releases for the rest of the year. And we're going to pick, is it going to go direct to streaming or is it going to go directly to 2021? Because Sam, I talked about this in the previous episode. I do not think anyone's going to the theater for the rest of 2020. Agree or no?
I think it's really tough, even though the studios put a bunch of stuff in dates for the, like they moved them. I think it's tough to say. So,
okay.
We'll see.
Well, I have put a few things into consideration for this list. Most of them are movies that you and I talked about in the last episode that we did together of things that we are waiting to see. And, you know, I've also taken into consideration how long those movies had already been advertised, the studio that's behind them and what they could possibly do. So, yeah, I have a few titles here and Sam and I are going to put our respective opinions on these, whether or not they'll be streaming or 2021. And as we, you know, as the rest of the year plays out, we'll see who the winner ended up being.
All right.
You ready to play a game?
I'm ready.
All right, dude. And we're going to go past our usual time for this, but I really think it's worth doing. Tenet, the Christopher Nolan movie, is set for August 21st, 2020. That's its second pushback date. This seemed to be the movie that theaters were hinging on opening at. So what do you say, streaming or 2021?
2021.
Me too. I agree with that, 2021. Next we have Bill and Ted Face the Music, which is supposed to come out on August the 14th. We got a lot of August and September here. This is the third Bill and Ted movie I've been excited for. When I got out of my seat for Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, I wanted to see this movie. So it's been quite a long time, and Freaked, while I love it, is not Bill and Ted 3. So what do you think, streaming or 2021?
Streaming.
I do too. I think streaming for that one. Little surprise it got made, and even more surprised that they think anyone was going to go to the theater to see that.
Yep.
Okay, so for August 21st, we've got Mulan, the long-awaited, which was originally supposed to come out, I believe, in March, and the horror film Antebellum. So for Mulan and Antebellum, which one do you take? One for both, or two for both, or one for one for the other?
So I think both streaming, and I think Mulan streaming only because I think Disney Plus is going to need something for the holidays. Uh-huh. And that's the one that they're going to push to the holidays for their streaming release.
Yeah. Now, horror movies have been doing really well at these drive-in things. Do you think Antebellum might go to streaming plus drive-ins? That's not really an option. I think streaming too, for both.
I don't think so.
All right. This next one is like, has been like rescheduled forever and ever and ever. I don't even know what year it was supposed to come out. The New Mutants, which is a Marvel movie, but like the dark, scary teenage horror New Mutants. Loved the cast in this. Loved the New Mutants comics when I was a kid. Have been very excited to see it. But much like My Spy, which we've been seeing the trailers for over a year, finally hit Amazon Prime, I think it was. New Mutants, do you think streaming or 2021? 2021 would be a joke. I don't think it would have a prayer in theaters if they delayed it.
See, I'm thinking though they're going to put it to 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's we'll differ here.
It's okay. All right. The next one, September 4th, we have A Quiet Place Part 2. Theaters or 20 streaming or 2021?
I think it's 2021.
You do?
Yeah. All it's right. Only been pushed once, and the first one did really well. And so I think, yeah.
I can see that being pushed to December because The Conjuring 3, which was listed as being released on 11 September 2020, I believe has already been moved to December, but I'm not quite sure. So we're saying theatrical for both of those. I agree. I think 2021 for both of those. September 25th, one of my most anticipated movies of the year, Candyman, Nia DaCosta's Candyman. Think streaming or 2021 for that one?
My gut tells me streaming, but I can't wait to see it. So I'm okay if it goes to streaming.
Yeah, me too. Oh God, I'm same. I'm so excited for it. You know. All right, this next one. This is a big one. We have October the 2nd. Wonder Woman 1984, which has been pushed back since, I believe, June or July. Do we say streaming or theatrical? Keep in mind, Warner Brothers has been insistent on this coming to the big screen.
It's going to the big screen. It's too big not to.
Okay, so we're saying 2021 for Wonder Woman 1984. All right, next one. We're getting near the end here. Do we want to do Halloween Kills and The French Dispatch, which is the new Wes Anderson, which is, you know, movies you love to see on the big screen, the Wes Anderson. This looks like one of his best movies ever. Do you feel like streaming or 2021 for either Halloween Kills or The French Dispatch?
I think they're going to both go streaming.
I do too. I agree. I wouldn't be surprised if The French Dispatch premiered on Criterion Channel. That'd be something, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. And maybe Shudder takes Halloween Kills. Let's see here. Here we go. One that's been pushed back. I know this was supposed to come out like March. This is November 6th, Black Widow. We say in 2021 for Marvel. What is that? It's going to be supposed to be the start of their phase 3 or phase 4. I don't even know what it is anymore.
Yeah, I think it goes to 2021 for theatrical release. Too big of a name, too big of a movie. It kind of starts the whole new era for Marvel. Like, it's moving.
Okay. Our next ones, two more big ones. We got No Time to Die, the new 007, which was already pushed back from its original release. It was going to be earlier in this year. And we have Soul, the new movie from Pixar. Do you say streaming or 2021 for either of these?
I'm going to take a gamble, and I'm going to say James Bond is going to go streaming, which might seem crazy, but yeah. I don't know that those movies do that amazing at theaters anyway. So I'm going streaming. And Pixar, again, Disney Plus has an opportunity for holiday time to like pick up so many subscribers by just putting that on Disney Plus. So
I agree with you. I think they'll move it to right around Christmas time for that. If not, keep that November 20th date and just move it to Disney Plus. All right, here, last two dates. We have some of our holiday big releases. December 18th, we got Dune, which is going to be the two-parter, the beginning of the two-parter of Dune. By the guy that made the last Blade Runner movie and Arrival. I love this guy's movies. We also have Steven Spielberg's West Side Story. And then the one I want to see the most of all of these holiday movies, Coming to America Part 2 by Craig Brewer with Eddie Murphy and most of the original cast. What do you say, man? Dune, West Side Story, Coming to America, streaming or 2021?
Dune is getting pushed to 2021.
Okay.
West Side Story, probably streaming. And Coming to America, I'm going to say 2021.
Yeah, see, I would think Netflix for that one.
It's tough. It's just so, I don't know.
Just because Craig Brewer and Eddie Murphy's previous film, Dolomite Is My Name, was a Netflix premiere. I also think this will be a Netflix premiere as well. As far as West Side Story is concerned, streaming, I believe. Yeah, true. Especially since I believe Hamilton did very well. But we also, Steven Spielberg doesn't like streaming like at all. He doesn't think it's real movies. So it'll be, but well. I agree on Dune. Let's see our last one. Top Gun Maverick, December 23rd, streaming or 2021?
2021. It's so close to 2021 anyway. It's just getting moved.
Yeah. Do you think anyone cares?
Unfortunately, I do think people care. Do I want to see Top Gun Maverick? Nah, not really. But I think that enough people care that it's going to get moved. Because yeah. where do you put it? You stick it in, like, you know, the movies that you've had to delay filming that were supposed to come out like next spring for that big push before summer. That's where you stick that movie.
Yeah. I just think everybody's going to be trying to make that Trolls World Tour money through the end of the year, because theaters aren't going to be safe. They're like way in the don't go category, along with bars and sporting events and concerts. So, you know, but I don't want to start talking. I read this. I'm going to have to forward it to you. I read this great article about Val Kilmer. I had no idea. He's got like a feeding tube or tracheotomy box or whatever. He wears these scarves to hide it. Oh man, he's in Top Gun or something. I have no clue. I wish they would have brought Kelly McGillis back as the love interest, you know?
Yeah.
Someone that's Tom Cruise's age. McGillis is still acting. She was in The Innkeepers, a great movie. So, that would have been, I would have probably gone to the theater to see Top Gun Maverick. I think streaming and direct to Tubi. Direct to YouTube Red, I think, for that one. The 80s Karate Kid thing, wherever that was. No, sorry, direct to HBO Max. That's what I'm saying for Top Gun Maverick. Direct to HBO Max. Might be where West Side Story goes to HBO Max. Anyway, man, yeah, we've gone 2 minutes over the 1 hour mark. So thanks for hanging in there with me. And I hope you had fun playing the game. I hope you also know no one in the world who I know, and definitely nobody who I do a podcast with, would ever have wanted to play that game with me except for you.
Well, we'll see how good we are, won't we?
I don't know anybody that would have wanted to play that game with me, man. So thank you. And thank you for doing this, man. Everybody wear your mask. Listen to Sam. Sam says wear your mask.
Wear your mask.
That's right, man. And plus, it keeps the farts away from you. I mean, what else
more could you want? You don't have to smell them as bad.
Yeah, people's breath. A lot of these things are going away because of the mask. I probably will continue wearing the mask long after this has happened. For a variety of reasons, but mostly because, I want to be making faces at people while I'm talking to them.
That's great.